There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
You're looking at Hard Rock Stadium, site of Super Bowl 54, now just days away. But we say good afternoon from beautiful South Beach as this week shifts into high gear. The Chiefs and the 49ers getting set for a showdown in Super Bowl 54, and so are we. Ahead on NFL Live, we'll take a deep dive into both quarterbacks that will play in this game. We've got the strengths and weaknesses of Patrick Mahomes and Jimmy Garoppolo and tell you who we think just may have the edge. We pull out our free agent crystal ball, if you will, which veteran quarterbacks may be on the move and which one may be ready to hang up the cleats for good. And Giants running back Saquon Barkley joins the show. We'll get his thoughts on his sophomore season, a new head coach, and what's next for the New York Giants. Happy to have you with us on what can only be called a Chamber of Commerce Day here in South Beach. Happy to have these guys as well. I'm Wendy Nix, Adam Schefter, Chris Mortensen, Teddy Bruschi, and Louis Riddick. We will start this afternoon with the commissioner, Roger Goodell, delivering his State of the League address just a little while ago. One of the topics that came up, minority hiring in the NFL.
Clearly, we are not where we want to be on this level. We have a lot of work that's gone into not only the Rooney Rule, but our policies overall. It's clear we need to change and do something different. There's no reason to expect that we're going to have a different outcome next year without those kinds of changes. And we've already begun engaging in those changes, not just with our diversity committee, not just with the Fritz Pollard Alliance, but others, and trying to figure out what steps we can take next that would lead to better outcomes. And it's clear we're all committed to doing that, and we have to make those changes.
The commissioner beginning his answer to that question by saying, clearly we are not where we want to be. And Schefter and Mort, I'll start with you in terms of the reaction to this latest coaching hiring process.
Well, I thought it was embarrassing for the NFL to come up with the way it did in terms of minority hiring. It did not go the way the league would want to. There's a lack of candidates, or the league hasn't done a good enough job finding these candidates and bringing them along. And maybe that's where the league's attention and efforts need to go, to bring along the next chapter, the next group of candidates, so that it doesn't find itself in a position where it seems like it's going backwards and not forwards when it comes to minority hiring.
Yeah, and what the commissioner said is that during the next month, they're going to really roll up their sleeves and come up with a different model in terms of changing that Rooney Rule. And I think by the owners' meetings, the league meetings in March, you'll have something where we really will have more specifics on it in terms of expanding the pool. But let's just go to one in particular that I would mention. It's Eric Bieniemy, who's here as the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. His responsibilities are no different than what was Doug Peterson had under Andy Reid in Kansas City, or Matt Nagy, the Bears coach, had under Andy Reid in Kansas City, but yet it wasn't good enough for Eric Bieniemy on this run.
I think it's good to start with hearing the commissioner say that, hey, this isn't being done right. And I think that was powerful in itself to listen to, because obviously there are tremendous minority head coaching candidates out there, and until they're recognized, until this problem's fixed, you know, they're going to work on it. That's what he says. But to hear him acknowledge it was something I thought was important in his remarks.
And you know what? The word fix is something that, look, I don't necessarily know how you fix this. I don't care what kind of procedures and protocols you put into place. This is about personal choice. Okay, because you can have as many candidates as you want. You can have the most qualified candidate staring an owner square in the face. And if he doesn't want to hire him, he's not going to hire him. So how do you change that behavior? How do you change that decision-making process on the part of owners who are the ones who are driving this? The people who he meets with every day, the ones who he works for, until they decide to say, hey, look, here's a guy like Eric Bieniemy, right? If you sit and talk to Andy Reid and you have Andy Reid spell out what Eric is responsible for over a seven-day football week, it is extraordinary what he's responsible for. It's extraordinary what people in Kansas City will tell you about him as far as his attention to detail, his leadership, the respect that he conjures up, what people like Pat Mahomes will say about him. There really is no excuse for him not being hired unless Eric is doing something in these interviews that none of us know about, as far as, you know, totally just flubbing the interview. So I like, this frustrates me, obviously, as a minority, obviously as an African-American who was interviewed for some of these jobs, because this is about personal choice. And how do you change that? How do you change how an owner arrives at his decision? not how do you put more candidates in front of him. How do you, what are they looking for that African Americans and minorities to this point don't seem to be providing for them? That's the question I would like to know.
Well, and as we all know, you can change the process. It's a bit harder to change a culture, which is what they will have to do moving forward. Another question posed to the commissioner regarded the future or the situation of Antonio Brown. His situation, of course, has continued to deteriorate.
Antonio's situation, I think the first thing for all of us is to think about the well-being of Antonio. To understand what Antonio is going through. We don't talk about the wellness of our players publicly, but I would tell you that you can be assured that the NFL and the NFLPA have a tremendous amount of resources that are available to all players. They are going to be made available to Antonio, and that we want to help get him on the right track and get him in a position where he is in a zone where he thinks he can be successful in life.
Well, it's clear, Adam, that process has a long way to go to play out.
Well, listen, the NFL still was investigating the claims of sexual assault that were levied against Antonio Brown from this season. And then in recent days, Antonio Brown has found more trouble with the law. And so what the league is going to do is the league is going to group that all together before it renders a decision on discipline. So it's going to take the full package of evidence. So even when Antonio Brown is ready to get back into the league, he may be facing a lengthy suspension and lengthy discipline before he can get back in. And so now you're back to, as Roger Goodell said, making sure that his well-being is okay. That'll be the focus.
Yeah, and that's the right track. That's exactly what Commissioner's talking about. The right track has nothing to do with playing in the NFL right now.
Correct.
I mean, it's about the problem. You're talking about
but
possible.
But the player wants to play in the NFL right now.
He has to realize that's not happening right now for the immediate future for the reasons you're just talking about and the possible discipline that he may have to go through. So the right track is about getting his mental health in order so he can get his life in order first before any team starts to consider putting him on the field as a wide receiver.
I mean, mental health is a serious, serious issue.
Yes.
And it's something where, look, the player has no way of knowing what's best for him at this point. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in the position that he's in. And the people on the outside are the ones who need to take care of him. And I think Roger is very much so doing the right thing by emphasizing that this isn't about, I mean, most people want to hear about Wall. How long is he going to be suspended? How many games does he have to sit out? What does he have to do to get? Really, you need to kind of back that up and go, what exactly are we dealing with here? Because if the NFL, he already said the NFL has a lot of resources. There are many people who don't have access to the resources that the NFL does. And like I'll say this again, mental health is a serious issue in this country. And they are right to slow this thing down and say, what is the problem here? Because the signs are all there, and they need to take care of him.
And it's not just the NFL, but the NFL Players Association also has those resources available as well. It's getting the individual to a point where he will accept that help and use those resources.
Absolutely. That's a difficult thing to do.
Yes.
It's difficult to get people to do that.
You certainly have to say first things first in this instance, and that first thing is not football, not right now. Interestingly enough, one of the things the commissioner was not asked about but will certainly be a topic in the offseason more is instant replay, particularly with pass interference and the evolution of that as we continue to go forward.
Well, it is a competition committee matter. It was last year, and they were ready to do something to correct that atrocity call that we had in the Saints-Rams game. And then it was kind of captured by a couple coaches and the commissioner, and we ended up with this year. That's not working. My understanding is we will have a significant change, or we will have a change. It won't be what it was this year, and everybody will say amen to that, but we will have something that addresses that egregious call in the last 2 minutes, overtime or whatever, that it can be fixed. Replay is never going away because we're always going to have TV and slow motion and HD cameras. But that rule, yes, there will be change.
Yeah, because this was botched this year big time because, I mean, you have the rule, then we all try to figure it out in the preseason, and we're watching the preseason games almost waiting for a pass interference to be challenged.
Yeah.
So going into the regular season, okay, is that challengeable? Is that not? And then nothing getting overturned. Then all of a sudden, it seemed like there was a meeting. There was a meeting with someone. And then all of a sudden, they started overturning certain calls. So they're like, which way is it? The coaches were confused. More importantly, it's the NFL. The fans were confused on what was pass interference. So just getting this cleaned up. And I like what they're doing in terms of that last 2 minutes. Give someone control to fix if something is just wrong. But I'm wondering when it's finally going to get to the point where it's just an entire game. Take the flags away and say, if the replay official upstairs sees something, he has the buzzer that can buzz the official and say, we got to fix something. And that's how simple it can be, in my opinion.
Mm. All right. Like to that. Be continued. There is no question about that. Mort, Adam, thank you.
No, we'd like to stay.
I'd love for you to stay. It's beautiful afternoon. Spend it with us. Well, greetings from Miami is right. Here's the good news. Listen, small task for you. You just replaced Morton Adams, so you're good. We've got Dan Orlovsky joining.
Insurmountable task.
Yeah, so you take care of that. Of course, he joins Teddy Lewis and I as we continue here, again, making our way towards Super Bowl 54. Let's take a look at some of the top storylines as we get ready for the game. The Chiefs are back in the Super Bowl and seeking their first title in 49 seasons. Only the Eagles have gone more seasons between a pair of championship wins in NFL history. Kansas City is here thanks in large part, no question, to the heroics of Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs quarterback has already thrown 8 touchdowns, leading a pair of double-digit comebacks this postseason. And Andy Reid is seeking that elusive first championship in his 21st season as a head coach. No coach has gone more than 14 seasons before winning his first Super Bowl. Sal Palantonio is with the Chiefs all week, and Sal joins us now. We talk about that Kansas City offense, Sal, but what about the Chiefs defense getting ready for the 49ers?
Wendy, let's get you right up to date on what's going on with the Kansas City Chiefs. They are at the Dolphins practice facility, left this morning. Their full practice, first full practice, in-depth practice of Super Bowl week. And you talk to the coaches, you talk to the players on defense, and they say the same thing. Have to have a sense of urgency. Have to create energy on defense right from the start, and you have to have a fast start.
Well, obviously, we want to practice as fast as we can because we know Sunday night the 49ers are going to play fast. They do a lot of different things, a lot of motions. You know, we'll have to communicate well, adjust well. But it's a great challenge for us. I think this is the proper time to put the right work in.
Most of the game plans in. What will you try to accomplish as a coach and a defensive staff today and tomorrow when you practice at the Dolphins facility?
Yeah, just a little bit more about the details of the game plan. Now, we did, Sal, save a couple of things to put in this week on purpose. Is something I just kind of learned from the other Super Bowls.
Right.
Because otherwise it gets stale. You know, you're feeding them all. And I get that. As a player, it's over and over. They don't want to listen to me anymore.
So what do you got new? Tell me.
I got a couple of tidbits. I'm not going to reveal that right now. But there's a couple of things.
Omerta, right?
Yeah. That's silence. No silence.
Hey, Wendy, ask Teddy Bruschi what omerta means. He'll tell you.
I have no clue, Sal.
Sal? Oh, no. Teddy with no answer. All right. That's all right. Sal, thank you very much. And again, one of the things that we will talk about all week long is strength against strength. And that's that 49ers offense facing the Chiefs offense facing that San Francisco defense. Here's what they had to say about that.
We understand that they're good defensive line, they're good linebackers, and they're good in the secondary. And you don't get a lot of units that are good everywhere like that.
They are as advertised. You know, when you watch them on film, they're physical. They rally to the football. They play very well.
I think we know that they have one of the best D-line in the league. We know that they have a great defense, a number two defense. We know that they're going to go out there and make plays.
It's just the different type of pass rushers that they have. I mean, they have the guys that are power rushers, they have guys that are speed rushers, and they have everything in between. And so for us, we understand it's going to be a great challenge playing up against this defense.
I mean, 49ers, they got a tremendous defense, tremendous coaching staff.
And we know that they're going to have a great scheme and they're going to have a great game plan. And so we have to execute our scheme at a high enough level to have success and to score points.
Are the 49ers the right defense to slow down that red-hot Chiefs offense? Well, both units ranked at or near the top of the league in several categories during the regular season. It's also only the second time the reigning MVP has faced the top-ranked pass defense in the playoffs. The other, by the way, 2009, when Peyton Manning beat the Jets in the AFC Championship. So, Teddy, I'll ask it like this. How will the Chiefs handle that pass rush?
Well, the pass rush is something you just can't ask your offensive lineman to consistently block them one-on-one. You're going to have to use some type of scheme and sometimes of help in terms of pass blocking schemes. That's what you have to do. So a couple plays that I noticed also in this NFC Championship game, that's Mercedes Lewis, the tight end right there, lined up right across from Bosa. You see how he pretends like he's pass blocking. This is a little tight end slip screen. And you see all the 49er defensive linemen, they want to fly upfield and get after that quarterback. So using their aggression against them and that speed and that get off. This is in the Kansas City Chiefs playbook right here. Here's Kelce doing the same thing that Lewis was doing there. Is he pass blocking? But it's not. He's very deceptive, Travis Kelce, in what he does, and deception is a big part of the Kansas City offense also. So those type of plays to slow them down. And also, receivers, running backs, you got to help out sometimes because you just got to get a chip like Fitz does right here. Spin this around. Bam! That type of chip, that's what slows down the rush. Larry Fitzgerald is about it. You got to get your receivers to want to make this commitment in Kansas City. If it's Kelce, he can do that too. This is from the AFC Championship game. Getting a chip before he releases. It's how you deal with this type of pass rush and how you get your quarterback the time to throw, deliver passes just like that. So a little bit of scheme and using running backs also in those screens and also chip blocks, but that's what has to be done to slow them down.
All right, here come the cover three looks if you're the Kansas City Chiefs. So you got to deal with it. How do you do that?
Yeah, first thing is understand this cover three structure that San Francisco runs. Like cover three is those three defensive backs play deep third of the field, vision on the quarterback. And then those four underneath defenders, they've got their zone. So the challenge is how do you flush or flood zones with people? You see safety going back, the flat defender going out. Now that inside linebacker's got vision on Travis Kelce in this structure right now. He's going to run a crossing seam towards the backside linebacker. And as Sammy Watkins comes in one motion one way, back across the other way, now you're going to flood that zone, force that flat defender out with Sammy Watkins, and you've created leverage for Shady McCoy on that inside linebacker to attack in that cover three zone. Another way to do it is get into two by two. Two guys on each side with the back on the back side. Condense the formation and run post wheel. Once you get into that set, those defenders have rules, responsibilities. You've got to take the post corner, and that safety needs to carry the wheel. Bring Shady from one side of the formation all the way across. You vacated those zones, and now these are easy throws for Patrick Mahomes to go attack those zones. Now, if you're going to play some man, this is the best rub or pick team in the NFL. Kelce sees that inside linebacker blitzing. That defensive end has to go play man coverage. Just that little pick 1 yard down the field creates an easy throw for Patrick Mahomes. So, I mean, they're going to face cover three. But against the Chargers, they showed knowing how to attack that cover three. And then if they get you out of that cover three and force you to play man, I'm telling you, this is the best man pick and rub team that we have in the league.
And that's why, you know what, when you are playing zone and when you are playing 3D, you cannot, what you saw on all those clips right there are defenders allowing free releases, especially second level defenders. If you do that, you're done.
Yeah, you cannot
okay,
do
you're
that.
Okay, it happens too fast. If you think you're just going to pattern match it down the field, these guys are running 4-2, 4-3. Yeah. It happens so fast. It's like zing. Like, you know, it's first down, touchdown, and the band's playing. So whether you're playing man or zone, the only way you slow down the Kansas City Chiefs, and Teddy, you know this. You guys were masters at it in New England. And Bill teaches the same thing.
Be physical.
Reroute, reroute, and reroute some more. Because if you don't, this is a 4x100 relay team out
there. Track team.
It's over.
I'll
tell you one thing about that great point that you had. When you're flooding that zone, that involves the backside player now. Because with that speed we're talking about, they have that speed to get over to the other side.
That's
and
right.
A quarterback that can deliver it there, too.
And that's the point. Andy Reid floods zones. Really in a modern way. Traditionally, it was flooding the zone with three people. He floods it now with four people to bring, like Teddy's talking, that backside defender over. It's really difficult to cover.
And then it's touchdown. Wait, first down, touchdown.
The band is playing. You have the pom-poms
okay.
out.
Yeah. Listen, we got our pom-poms out earlier for Patrick Mahomes, and rightly so. I mean, he's just been unbelievable. Continues to. His career is off to a really historic start, Lewis. Look, he's eligible for a new contract. It will blow wide open the market. Having said that, the team says, look, we want him here. He's a priority, but it might happen now. It might happen later. What do you think?
Wow. You know what?
Look,
I think for the player, it's interesting because look, he's going to make $2.7 million next year. And then maybe the year after that, if they played him on a fifth year option, he'd make about $24 million. It'll be about what is equal to the transition tag, about $24 million. Look, Lee Steinberg and his group, they do not want him playing next year for $2.7 million. Are you kidding me? This is going to be a contract that when it's all said and done, if it takes longer, Patrick assumes that risk, then all of a sudden the new CBA comes in the play, the new TV money comes into play. It'll be conservative talking about the numbers they're talking about now, which is this. Pat's deal could average somewhere between $44-46 million per year. It could be in upwards of $220 million in total. It could be upwards of $165 million guaranteed. Now, you factor in new TV money, Cha-ching. Oh, boy. Cha-ching, cha-ching. But that would involve a lot of risk. That would mean he's playing next year for basically nothing. You're talking about a guy who is already a reigning MVP, maybe is deserving of another MVP, maybe is going to be a Super Bowl MVP, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and everyone and his mother right now is saying, maybe the best player ever.
Hey, you know what's
so
great is,
he's got everything. He's 24.
Is watching Lewis get out of his seat talking about it, like the excitement of...
Wish it was me.
Having to pay a guy that much money.
We all wish it was us. Are you kidding? Mahomes, by the way, ranked 31st among quarterbacks in cap hit this year. It's really unbelievable. Yep. Teddy, before we go, I think your people are here. Do you see it?
My people?
Yeah, your people.
Hey, I like the flag.
Yeah, I think it's right. And they've got it strategically positioned.
They have their dog in an outfit as well.
And that's commitment.
The Patriots outfit.
That's the kind of commitment Teddy likes.
Welcome to Miami, baby.
Welcome to Miami.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to Miami.
Welcome to Miami is right. I got to tell you, it's not terrible. It is not terrible to be here as Miami gets set for its 11th Super Bowl, breaking a tie, by the way, with New Orleans as the city to host the most Super Bowls. Meanwhile, around the league, ESPN Bears reporter Jeff Dickerson reporting that Mitchell Trubisky underwent surgery at the end of the season to repair the partially torn labrum in his left non-throwing shoulder. Trubisky initially hurt that shoulder week 4 against the Vikings. He did miss one game as a result. The Cowboys were Super Bowl hopefuls at the start of the year, instead facing an offseason full of difficult decisions, none bigger than Dak Prescott, a free agent after the conclusion of his rookie contract. Here's Dak with Sage Steele about the contract.
How close are you to having a new contract, Dak?
Just say I'm confident. I'm confident a new contract is coming. I'm confident in my agent and my team, and confident in the Cowboys that something will get done. There's a lot of things that have to come into play when you're talking about a contract. Never just look at the money. Never just look at what people see or the attention grabber. It's a lot of details to it. It's people that know that handle that. So I'm leaving that up to my agent. And like I said, I have all the confidence in both sides.
So when the season began and it wasn't done, what'd you tell yourself?
I don't play the game for money. Never once in my life have I ever touched a football and thought about money. I play the game because of my love, my passion. So once the season began, that's all my focus was on. Was on my love, the love of the game, and my commitment to my teammates. I control the things that I control. Can't say that wasn't disappointed or there weren't things about it that didn't set right or feel right. But the way that I play the game, the way that I approach my everyday, had no effect. Contract had no effect on it.
You can see the entire conversation with Dak Prescott and Sage Steele tonight, 6 o'clock SportsCenter. He's part of a loaded free agent quarterback class. Take a look at this. Legends Tom Brady and Drew Brees don't have a contract yet. And Ryan Tannehill is available after a breakout season. And keep in mind, this list could expand as quarterbacks potentially get cut. Cam Newton, Andy Dalton among those who could feasibly change teams. So, what are we going to call it? Our crystal ball? Our prediction? We're going to look at where these guys
ball.
Might. Crystal ball.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Go crystal ball.
All right. We'll go crystal ball and try to figure out where these guys may end up. And we're going to start. Who are we starting with? No? Anyone? Anyone? Dak Prescott. We're going to start with Dak Prescott. So, gentlemen, you got different options here, right? You got little things. That's the technical term.
Well, just take this to the bank, all right? We're about to tell you how the league's about to
Dak
play
Prescott,
itself out, right?
Go.
We're about to tell you. Dak Prescott?
Where's
Dak
going?
Who's going first?
Oh, you can
we're
go
all
ahead and
going
say,
first.
He's
all
going
back
to Dallas. He's going to the Dallas Cowboys. All right, he's staying put.
Yeah, I mean, why? Look, this is a place that drafted him, cultivated him, have developed him. He's developed relationships with people there. They brought in people to help him. They brought in Amari Cooper specifically to help Dak take his game to another level. They re-sign Ezekiel Elliott not only because he's the tone setter for arguably not just the offense but the entire football team, but to help Dak. They draft all these offensive linemen and they develop these offensive linemen. Why? To help have the quarterback operate in a healthy, safe environment. So why now would you not want to take care of him and all of a sudden send him down the road and start over new?
Yeah, and there's one mind I believe you really don't want to mess with, and it's that of your quarterback. So I'm hoping it's not of the franchise, like
man.
A one-year deal like this, because then your quarterback's thinking, what kind of year do I have to have based on another franchise tag or whatever it may be, a one-year sort of certainty. You want to give him that long-term security where he can go out there and know, you want me, I want you, let's go win a championship.
I think he's calling you guys fragile. I think that's what I, a little bit fragile.
That's the way I can put it.
Yeah, I know.
Don't mess with the quarterback's mind.
Yeah, okay.
And don't forget, like, they kept Kellen Moore because of the relationship that he has with Dak. I mean, that was in written law. Hey, Mike McCarthy, if you come on board, Kellen Moore stays.
But, all right, the next one, we'll see. Tom Brady. We got Tom Brady? Okay. Yep. TB.
Let them go first.
All right. All right.
I'm not holding up any other logo here. I just think that Tom's going to go through his little free agency period, make some visits, take some pictures, do whatever you want to do, and then in the end, calmer heads will prevail, and Tom will end back.
Shake hands, kiss babies, come home.
I'm going to New England.
I'm going to go the same way with that. I think there's tremendous, tremendous risk involved with him moving and going somewhere else and starting over. And I think, and that's not to say that, look, Tom can't survive anywhere but New England and with Bill and with Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, but I think there is such a, there's such a comfort level, and there's so much that he's invested in that place and so many things that they have built together in a system that right now he could teach as well as the coaches. To start all over with a group of weapons that he's not familiar with, and who knows how long. I mean, not only is it a risk to him, it's a risk to whatever team would be signing him as well. How much longer is he going to play? How much time do we have to develop Tom Brady in our system? I think it just behooves him to stay there. I just hope that they do right by him financially.
Josh McDaniels coming back, aid that process, you think, the fact that he stays
there? And I think the similarities between Brady and Belichick, you can't discount either because, I mean, of course, they disagree on things, but in terms of their competitors and preparation, for him to be with someone else, I think would be odd for him.
Okay.
Good point.
Okay.
I think he's
that is not Patriots
Vegas.
Logo.
Vegas.
Connect the dots. Okay, so dominant offensive line, like really good offensive line in
Trent
Las
Brown
Vegas.
There,
okay,
yeah.
Tyrell Williams, a good young receiver. Waller, a really good young tight end. Josh Jacobs, they could run the football. They got the 12th pick in the draft, and everyone knows this is a incredibly deep wide receiver class. You can get another piece. This could be a really enticing opportunity for Tom Brady to go to Vegas and kickstart that organization, start his branding
it
of
will
himself.
Sell tickets.
And they've got a lot of pieces out there. So,
yeah. And John Gruden likes.
I don't think he's going back to New England. I think Scarnecchia retiring was the final straw.
I think as the word.
I don't think Tom wants to sell tickets, Wendy. He wants to win championships.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So we'll
but I mean,
see.
From the Raiders' perspective, it would certainly be a splash.
And I think as the word goes, we'll know sooner rather than later that this is a process that's going to happen pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. That we'll know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Which
right.
I think would
let's
be
do
best
one more.
For
this
all
is
all
fun.
Us.
Let's do one. You want to do now?
You having fun, Wendy?
Drew Brees.
Okay, good.
Drew Brees.
We got you.
You got Drew. All right. Who's you went first? You go first, Dan.
Let's just all put it.
Drew
Brees is a saint, literally and figuratively. I don't think there's any chance that he retires, and I think that the Saints want him back. This was a team that we all thought was going to be a Super Bowl contender, and they just played poor on a game against the Vikings that knocked him out of the playoffs. So Drew Brees is still plenty good. He had come back after the hand injury this year and was playing football at the quarterback position as good as anybody. Sean Payton knows that he can still play at an incredibly high level, and they'll continue to sprinkle in Taysom Hill. Drew Brees comes back for one more year, and they make one more final Super Bowl run.
I agree with you because I know he said he needs a little more time to decide, but I'd need a little more time based on the last couple seasons and how they've ended for them. I mean, the mental type of just conflict that you had in three in a row in terms of the miracles and the calls and things like that. To think that one of those at least, possibly you should have got another ring, it's hard to get over.
Yeah, you don't want to close this window prematurely. And Drew's still playing at a high enough level, and their team's in good enough shape to where you know they'll be a contender. Why would you? And that doesn't necessarily mean that the window would close if you had a guy like Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill, who they like at quarterback as well. But it's Drew freaking Brees.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. You had a bunch of one-liners today. You're on a roll.
Feeling,
this next one will be interesting.
Feeling dangerous.
Feeling dangerous because we know there will be a change. Because that's, you know, both the player has moved on. The team has said that's the way it's going. Philip Rivers. Somebody got Philip out there? There you go. Philip Rivers, gentlemen.
Let me start with mine then. I'm going to go retired.
Oh, wow. Well, clean sweep.
How about
this? That's a wrap?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's done. I think he moved to Florida on purpose, and I don't know if there's going to be a ton of opportunity for him either. I don't know.
For someone his age to start all over again.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
This is an interesting one. And you know what? Look, you could, there's been plenty of people who have been arguing that Tom is, you know, is destined to eventually go off a cliff from as far as his athletic ability is concerned. I just didn't see that last year. Drew Brees is still playing at a very high level based on his last game. Watch Philip Rivers in Mexico City up close and personal. And I've long been a very, very ardent fan of Drew Brees. I mean, of Philip Rivers, especially his mind and how much he controls at the line of scrimmage. And cerebrally, he's on par with some of the very best. But physically, it looks different now. It always looked like he had to be perfect before within the context of how he throws the football, which is not ideal. But now it looks like it's really just caught up to him. It just has. And I think scouts and GMs will look at it the same way. It would take a very unique situation. I just don't see a team going, we're going to pluck him and he's going to be a difference for us. Unless it's a situation where they draft someone and they are, I mean, can you imagine, Philip Rivers being benched in the middle of a season for a younger quarterback? Does he want to go out like that? Do you want to go through that kind of situation with him? Which I think is what he would be headed for. So I say retired. Now he'll probably go and throw for 4,000 yards somewhere. But
yeah, and he also saw, I mean, his classmate Eli last week retire as a Giant and only a Giant.
Right.
And so
yeah.
Philip may want to retire as a Charger and only a Charger.
Well, and I think, too, Eli, after kicking the tires a little bit and saying, look, the opportunity may be limited here.
Which may be the exact same case.
That's my point. Yeah, you know? It may be the same case here.
These guys are linked.
Yeah.
All right.
Think about that.
Again and again and again. How about Ryan Tannehill? We got Ryan out there.
Yeah, there. Can't argue with that.
Okay. A clean sweep for the Tennessee Titans. Obviously, they have the franchise tag at their disposal as well.
You can't debate how good Ryan Tannehill played at the end of this season. He was one of the main reasons why they went on their run to the AFC Championship game. He was playing quarterback at an incredibly high level. It's the style of quarterback that Mike Vrabel wants his guy to play. Run the football, utilize the play-action pass, value the football, don't hurt our defense, don't hurt our team by turning it over. And so I think there's a mutual interest on both parties to go back, and it's a great story, obviously. And I expect him to want to go back, and I expect Tennessee to get it done.
Well, good news, Mike Vrabel will join us tomorrow. Teddy will be here. We'll just ask him. He'll tell us.
Are you signing Tannehill? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, done.
Okay, good. Next. We'll be able to cross that one off tomorrow. One more before we move on. 30 for 30, gentlemen. Jameis Winston.
Who you got, Ben? Who you got?
The Bears?
I'm going the Chicago Bears. Just as a very similar situation to what we saw with Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill. A starter that had some decent stuff and had some issues. And with Mitchell Trubisky in Chicago, just had surgery. And there's some questions tied to him, and they want him to be their starter. But there is evidence that if you bring a guy in and he could be your backup but ready to go play, he can help your football team get to the playoffs. And the Bears are a playoff caliber football team. So Jameis Winston going there on a one-year type of potential backup, potential starter, prove-it deal, I can see in Chicago.
I'll just say he's going back to Tampa Bay. Jameis, I know with the whole problem, and we can start talking about him throwing the interceptions, and he said himself about let's just limit those just a little bit, and it'll be fine. But I think Arians can possibly get the best out of him. And like you said, for Tannehill, maybe it's the best of both parties for him to just go back.
Yeah,
I'll go for Tampa Bay.
I mean, after a while, when someone shows you who they are, when are you going to start believing that maybe Jameis can't correct this issue? I don't know. This is I said the Chargers only because, like, when you look at a team like the Bears, and I'm sitting there thinking about, okay, that makes sense as far as competing with Mitch Trubisky, but knowing Matt Nagy the way I do, would he take on that kind of profile as far as how risky he is with the football? That's not what they need up there. They need good Jameis, but they don't need bad Jameis. Then would he be the right profile to be a backup? So it's just like, that's a very interesting situation right there. And I would not, personally, I'd have a tough time with it just because of what he's already shown me.
Well, look, isn't that the story of his career? Everybody needs a good Jameis.
I'd have a tough time with
Jameis is solid and then some, but the other is, well, it's the other. Listen, if you watch the Super Bowl and then you're missing football, not to worry. There will not be a long wait this year because Saturday, February 8th on ABC and the ESPN app, the XFL season kicks off 2 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Head coach Jim Zorn will lead Seattle against Cardale Jones and the D.C. Defenders in Washington, D.C. It is the debut of the XFL on ABC. The Niners are looking for their sixth Super Bowl. San Francisco here after winning only four games last year. Only the 1999 Rams have become champions the year after winning four games or less. It's been the running game. San Francisco has run the ball three quarters of the time this postseason. And then there was Raheem Mostert breaking out in the NFC title game, making all kinds of trouble. The flip side of that, Jimmy Garoppolo, well, he hasn't had all that much work to do. Jimmy G, in a breakout year, has still thrown just 27 passes in the postseason, including eight against the Packers in the NFC Championship game. Josina Anderson is covering the 49ers this week and joins us with the latest on San Francisco. JoJo?
Well, Wendy, one of the things that the 49ers defense is keenly aware of is Chiefs head coach Andy Reid's creativity and production on offense, particularly when he has 2 weeks to prepare. Andy Reid is 18-3 in the regular season and 5-2 in the postseason when coming off of a bye. Records that the 49ers defense might find concerning, particularly when you consider what defensive lineman D. Ford told me is part of the reason why the Packers started to mount a comeback in the second half of the NFC Championship game after initially being shut out 27-0. Ford told me, number one, it's because the Packers started to show them plays that they'd never seen before in the second half. And number two, they started to no huddle at an unusual rate. But Ford told me that he says part of the kryptonite that they feel like they'll have against Patrick Mahomes on Sunday is the preparation of defensive coordinator Robert Saleh. He said, contrary to Saleh's animated demeanor that he's known for and that he has on the sidelines on Sunday, he actually is very calm and simple about the way that he breaks down the defensive game plan. So Ford says, not only does that allow rookies like Dre Greenlaw to play faster, but more importantly, adjust more efficiently in the moment. Wendy, back to you.
Josina, thank you. Again, no secret, the 49ers have relied heavily on their rushing attack. Here's what they had to say about their own ground game.
It's just a combination. Those guys up front, the skill guys buying into it, Kyle calling, you know, great plays, getting us into the right play. I think just it takes a whole team to run the ball. And we've been doing pretty good at it.
We're going to do what works for us. You know, we run the ball really well. We have three incredible running backs, four incredible running backs, if you count Jeff Wilson, which I do. You know, we just got guys that make plays 24/7. And, you know, if you run the ball 45 times, you don't really need to throw the ball. And you got a guy like Jimmy back there, you know, who has won us games with his arm. You know, you don't really worry about anything. It's just, it all takes care of itself. So we're going to run the ball as much as we can. We're going to run it down your throat. And then if you happen to stop us, we're just going to, hey, Jimmy, make the play. And he's going to make the play.
All right, look, bottom line here, can this run game continue the way it has in Super Bowl 54?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And the reason is that Kyle Shanahan is the best coach in the NFL in three ways with their run game. One, he creates space in the run game better than anybody. And it's not just using the space. He creates space by the way he formations their offense. And then two, he gains the numbers advantage again. I mean, football, 11-on-11. And so he creates the space, and then he gets the numbers advantage back in that space. And then if you just watch this run game, consistently, game after, they make defensive backs tackle their running backs early in football games. And it sets a tone for them throughout this football game. So, like, those three areas are why this run game is so good, and that's the biggest challenge for the Chiefs defense is how are they going to defend the space, how do they match up with the numbers, and then Breland and Ware and those defensive backs are going to have to be willing to tackle from the first quarter all the way through.
Yeah, Orlovsky's right, because this run game is a headache. I mean, really, playing in a lot of Bill Belichick coach defense like I did, when we went up against his father, Mike Shanahan, everything was scrapped. Mm-hmm. We almost pushed a reset button in terms of our scheme because he was that different. Now you add all these shifts and motions, and you're making me move, and your safety's coming across, and your linebacker's trying to adjust, and all of a sudden the ball snapped, and that's the space Dan's talking about, because it's the way Kyle schemes with those shifts and motions that I'm confused as a linebacker, because I'm trying to line people up first.
Yeah, it's imperative that you know what you're doing, especially when things change on you. It's easy to defend static formations. When things move, all of a sudden your mind starts going,
line up!
I've been in plenty of those situations where you sit there and go, and you can't make a call. But the number one thing that Chiefs have to be able to do, regardless of anything, get penetration. That's what they did against Tennessee. That's how they stopped Derrick Henry. Chris Jones has to play a monstrous game. Yeah. And this is going to be the guy to watch. Watch Tyrann Mathieu in this football game, especially when they're in sub and he's at nickel or the star position. He's going to be a key. You talk about defensive backs who have to tackle. He's going to have to tackle. Because Raheem Mostert, Mostert is super fast. That's a totally different profile than Derrick Henry. But I will say this, too. I believe the Chiefs are very confident going against this running game for one reason. Tennessee, many people thought, had the best offensive line in football. And they pretty much dominated that offensive line. Let's just see how they fare in this game. I think Kansas City's kind of laying in the weeds right now.
Those safeties of Sorensen and Matthew.
Yeah.
They're going to be big.
Just another reason it is an intriguing matchup. I mean, on paper, this is shaping up to be a good one. To look closely at these two quarterbacks, different, and they certainly got to this game in different ways. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes.
Well, Patrick Mahomes is going to be seeing a ton of zone defense. As a quarterback, one of the things you need to do is be able to move defenders with your eyes. Mahomes is really like Pinocchio without the nose growing. He's a great liar or eye disguiser. Last year against San Francisco, that cover three, those three defenders go back, and those underneath defenders have their hook areas. You see a stick knot at the top of the screen, and down at the slot, you're going to see Tyreek Hill having the same move. He's got to move that safety to create some space to make that throw. You see the vision of his body turn with his eyes going that way as well. Get that safety to drive, and you open up that tight end down the seam. Again, against Oakland this year, you're going to have a crosser and then a field post going from the right all the way across the left. The middle safety is the guy you have to do something to move. It's not just your eyes. See the eyes and the shoulder turn all together. Get that safety play over the top, and that allows you to throw that field post across the field. So he is phenomenal with tying his eyes to his body and turning everything where he's looking to get guys to truly move and open up windows.
That's why we had to come down here so Dan would have plenty of room to operate. Tim, we expect the same. Hello, by the way, Tim Hasselbeck joining us.
Introduction.
It's a big one. It's a big one. Why don't you tell us about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, he gets easy throws, and he gets easy throws that turn into big plays because he's got a great play caller and play designer in Kyle Shanahan. You know, Dan's talking about getting guys open with using your eyes. Well, they get guys open by play design. This is 200 jet stick Y shallow. Okay, he's going to work the stick to his left and then come to the Y shallow if he doesn't like the stick. This is a 5-yard throw right in front of the quarterback that ends up turning into a 20-yard gain. That's an easy throw and a big pickup. Similar thing here on their move the pocket plays. He's going to throw a slide route into the flat, really 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and it's going to turn into a chunk yardage passing play. It's over a 15-yard gain. And then when they call shots, they design guys and get them wide open early in the season against Cincinnati. Move the pocket play again. They're going to, you know, make it look like everything's going to the right, and then it's going to be the little shallow wheel route to Marquise Goodwin. The guy covering him in man-to-man coverage is outside the opposite hash mark. They do such a good job of creating easy throws. So people are saying, hey, can Jimmy Garoppolo really do this? Is he good enough to win a Super Bowl? Well, when he's paired with this play caller and he can get guys that wide open and create easy throws, then the answer is yes.
Okay, which is the point, and that's a big part of why they're here. All right, quarterback more or less. All right, we'll run through these. Patrick Mahomes, 3 passing touchdowns.
Three or more than three passing touchdowns.
Three.
More than three for Patrick Mahomes.
That's what you're saying, more.
Yeah, okay. He's going to have more than 3. I expect to have a really big afternoon. It's going to be a great contest. I think he's a Hall of Fame caliber player, and usually when you play a top 2 defense in this Super Bowl, it takes a Hall of Fame type of performance. I think we're going to get one out of Patrick Mahomes.
I think he ends up playing great as well, but he's only thrown more than 3 touchdowns twice this season. Only twice. As great as he's been, he's only done it twice.
How dare you talk against, bad about Patrick Mahomes.
Against a Niners defense that's only given up 23 touchdown passes on the season. So I think he can play great. They can win the game, but I don't know that he throws 3. I'm going less.
Okay, I'm
going
to start with you because you make it, you know, you like to make it tricky.
Jimmy Garoppolo,
1 passing touchdown, more or less.
That's so disrespectful.
He's not throwing.
No, it's not. It's a question.
It's not, and I don't think he's throwing more than 1 touchdown pass. The Chiefs have only given up 21 touchdown passes. So this idea that he's going to go in and look,
I think
he can play well. They want to run the football. There's no question they want to do that, but they played 18 games between the regular season and the postseason. He's thrown 1 or fewer in 9 of those games.
You channeling Dan Graziano.
I think it was 11.
I think we're going to get a high scoring Super Bowl, and all these 2 weeks, everyone for the Chiefs has heard, like, stop the run, stop the run. I think Kyle Shanahan is going to be inherently aware of that, and he's going to get some of those easy throw touchdown passes. I'm taking more for Jimmy G.
You know what? We had more, but you guys talked too much. That's all we have time for, because, you know, next time.
I had some good stats for the
next time. Saquon Barkley has enjoyed a historic start to his career. In 2018, he joined Eric Dickerson and Edgerrin James as the only rookies with over 2,000 scrimmage yards. Barkley also became the fifth player with 2,000 rushing yards and 1,000 receiving yards through two NFL seasons. That's despite missing three games with a high ankle sprain. And he's been a home run hitter. Barkley already has six career rushing touchdowns of 50 yards. Only Chris Johnson has had more 50-yard rushing scores through two seasons. And thrilled to have with us this afternoon, Saquon Barkley. He joins us courtesy of new Old Spice Ultra Smooth line and available in stores now. I got it all out. Exactly, do you like that, Saquon? Exactly. I got it all out. Listen, I'd be remiss not to start with Eli Manning because we saw him hang up his cleats after an extraordinary career. What was it like playing with the quarterback?
It was amazing. Some people ask me, well, what's my welcome to the NFL moment? And yeah, there's some hits, but my thing would probably be when I walked into the locker room or the lunchroom and Eli Manning came, and I kind of realized that Eli Manning was my teammate, and watching him win some Super Bowls, unfortunately won against you.
But, I throw that in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So already we're talking about
it. Way to endear yourself, Saquon.
But it was, I mean, he gave the game 16 years. You know, I'm glad to see him go out on, you know, on his own terms. Always a giant, always being a giant, and having a great career, and learned a lot from him as a young player.
What's interesting is that there had already been a passing of the guard, so to speak, because we saw Daniel Jones take over as a starting quarterback. What did you see from the rookie QB?
I think he did a great job. He got in there and made a lot of plays from us, and you can see that he's very talented. But the thing that impresses me the most is has nothing to do with what he's capable of doing on the field. It's that mindset, that mentality that he has. He truly wants to be great, and he wants to help lead New York back to the glory days, and along with myself. And I think if we are able to continue to have that mindset and continue to believe and continue to drive the culture that we're trying to build there, I think things will turn around.
You see the youth of the quarterbacks in this game, and Jimmy Garoppolo and Patrick Mahomes. You think it's important for Daniel to understand and feel the pressure that there's no reason why this can't be done next year and be done soon?
Yeah, I don't think it's pressure. I think that's what he's expecting. You know, that's what we all expecting. We understand how talented that we are, and obviously things have not been going our way, especially these last few years. But we understand how talented we are. We understand what we got in our locker room. We're doing all the little things right, We just got to find a way to translate to football games and start winning some more football games. And I think once we get a couple on our belt and get that confidence as a team, as a young team, you know, the sky could be the limit.
How are you approaching this offseason to say, look, we need to get off on the right track, or we need to seriously turn this thing and get it going in the right direction?
Well, Coach Judge, one of the first things Coach Judge asked me is, you know, what will we change from last year or the last 2 years? And the thing that I said was find a common why. You know, everyone has their whys, and when you think about it, it's all individual whys. But what's our why? Like, if we just want to be mediocre, then let's just be mediocre. If we want to say we want to go compete for a Super Bowl, then let's go say we want to compete for a Super Bowl, and we hold everyone accountable for it. And that starts with Coach Judge, and that goes down to the leaders, myself, the young leaders, and it got trickled down to the rest of the team. And, you know, when he asked me that question, and I just, you know, just the look in his eye, you know, he was ready to go at that moment. And, you know, I'm so thankful and so happy that we were able to hire him, and obviously along with all the other staff members that we hired, and I'm ready to get this thing going.
Saquon, in addition to a new head coach, you have a new offensive coordinator as well. Jason Garrett, of course, comes over from the Dallas Cowboys. Any early impressions of Coach Garrett?
I got on the phone with him. I miss him because he was in the Alabama for the Senior Bowl. And one of the first things he said to me was, you know, I like to run the ball, right? And I was like, trust me, I was on the sideline for 2 years going against you guys twice a year when I saw the things you did with Zeke. So, but not only with Zeke, you know, Dak had you know, some great years there. Mark Cooper, they always had, you know, great skill guys and a great offensive line, and always had a very good offense. And but, you know, I know it's not only offense. It's offense, defense, special teams, and all the little things in between. And, you know, I don't feel like I know we have the talent. I know we have the right people in the building, and we have the right attitude and the mentality. But now we just got to start getting things rolling and get on the right foot.
Saquon, like the rest of us this week, you've been a part of mourning the loss of Kobe Bryant, which I think, you know, everybody's still reeling from. And you had this to say on Instagram, and I'll read it. Kobe is someone who I idolize and has helped me become the person I am today and the man I hope to be. What did Kobe mean to you?
He meant so much to me. Me and my dad were talking about it before, and my parents, my mom and my father did a great job of raising me, and I don't want to take any credit away from them, but he even said, you know, he don't think I'll be the type of player, the type of person I am today if it wasn't for Kobe Bryant. I've really, you know, studied him and really, like, I wasn't allowed to idolize people, but I really did idolize him and all the things he did. There'd be nights where I would just literally just sit in bed and just look at multiple videos on YouTube, or whether it's a documentary of him, whether it's just him talking about work ethic, talking about how to be great, talking about how to challenge others, how to have impact on other people's, and obviously the loss of, you know, not only him, but all other passengers and his daughter, Gigi, me being a father of a daughter. And, you know, just to see the ways when you see them on that court and those pictures of them on that court and how people ask Kobe, be like, oh, when are you going to have your son? You need to have a son. And his daughter responds saying, don't worry, I'm going to handle that. I'm going to handle the basketball side. That's the confidence that I want to instill in my daughter one day. And, you know, and I hope I can just do half of that. And I want to honor him by just, you know, just how I operate in life and how I do with my work ethic. And obviously I wasn't fortunate enough to meet him, but if I was able to, there's a lot of things that I would have said, and it would have been starting off with saying thank you for everything.
And in the past, you even felt compelled enough with your relationship, looking up to Kobe Bryant. You wrote a letter to him referencing the poem Ozymandias about a traveler coming upon a kingdom in ruins, and then seeing that ruins and what that meant to you and how it related to Kobe. Explain that to us.
Because, like you explained, you did a really good job. It's not just about, you know, where you start. You know, it's where you end up at, and you can't see it. You can't see it. But you got to keep working for it. And not only with that, with just everything. Like there's a part where I said when Kobe was born, I think there was 10 Kobes in the world. Now there's thousands, and when I was born, there's only 14 Saquons, and I hope to have that same impact that there's thousands of Saquons. And you don't know what your future holds, and it may not look the greatest in the beginning, or you may have some struggles, or you may go all the way up and come back down, but you got to persevere through it and try to find the right way to do it.
Good, man.
All right, we'd be remiss not to ask you, though, Chiefs or 49ers? We are here for a Super Bowl.
It's hard to go against the Chiefs. I'm gonna pick the 49ers. It's hard to go against the Chiefs because what that boy Patrick Mahomes can do on a football field.
It is.
Obviously with the help of Kelce and Hill and all those guys and Tyron on defense. Maybe I'm biased because I'm a running back, but I feel like you gotta be able to run the ball. And you gotta be able to play defense. And that's something that they do well. Top two defenses are 15-5 in Super Bowl. So I think they.
That's some research.
This man comes prepared. There's no sitting in the fence
here.
Okay, you're hired. All right, Saquon, thank you so much for being here, and have a great week. After the big game on Sunday, we'll have NFL Primetime with Steve Berman, Steve Young, and Randy Moss live from the field. All the highlights and post-game interviews, you can always watch both on the ESPN app from anywhere. Meanwhile, this date in NFL history has a distinctly Miami Super Bowl feel.
In celebration of the NFL's 100th season, we look back at this date in NFL history. January 29th, 1995. 49ers quarterback Steve Young got the proverbial monkey off of his back, leading the 49ers to a 49-26 win over the Chargers in Super Bowl 29. He threw a Super Bowl record 6 touchdown passes, 3 to Jerry Rice, 2 to Ricky Waters, and 1 to William Floyd, and was named the game's MVP. With the win, the Niners became the first franchise in NFL history with 5 Lombardi trophies.
Thank you, Joe Test. Perfect segue. Who needs to get the monkey off their back in Super Bowl 54?
You got to bring up Kyle Shanahan because everyone knows
Atlanta.
The number, right?
Yep.
I say Andy
28
Reed.
To 3?
Andy Reid, he's got the young, cheap quarterback that's a superstar Hall of Famer in the making. Strike now.
Yeah, look, I think Andy Reid has had 3 12-4 teams over the past 4 years. He's got the hottest quarterback in the league. He's already lost the Super Bowl. You got to win this one. It's Andy.
Andy Reid?
No question.
All right.
That was a heck of a deficit he lost there.
Yeah,
but,
that's a tough one. It's been a minute since he's been back, but nevertheless, he's here. NFL Live continues from South Beach tomorrow afternoon. Hope you join us. The Jump with Rachel Nichols starts right now.